else, everybody out to our work meeting for our Wednesday, April 10th, 2019 City Council meeting. First thing we will start with is a review of this evening's agenda. Are there any items that need to be moved around or addressed for tonight?
The only thing I will say, Mayor, we've talked over with our group of people, our staff, employees that's been involved with the stormwater being that hearing on that for tonight. We probably do, we kind of feel it's going to be kind of positive and good if we actually do that a few times.
Okay.
To give the public more opportunity to hear about it, sort of aware of it, or council's decision.
Okay.
So we've had an open house and we're not having it show up, so here we go, kind of more opportunity for them to.
So is that item 9.2?
That's obviously, you know, it's going to be on their phones, right? We'll be on the future too.
Yes, 9.2.
For a few times.
So we're just going to leave it.
That's what I'm closing, leave it all
planning.
Bring it back.
No, I think sometimes you don't notice until it shows up on your bill, isn't it?
Yeah. We know that will still happen, but at least we'll make sure we cover the process pretty thoroughly.
Okay. Any future agenda items we'd like to address?
2019.
Okay. We will go ahead and move straight on to item 3.1, legislative update. Chris?
Excellent.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mayor. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that we made a little bit of a change. My daughter turned 15 today, which I was just telling Brett, I got an auto insurance quote for next year, and my retainer just tripled, because that's apparently what auto insurance does. So anyway.
Raising teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. It was a crisis today. So anyway, thanks for having me, Clint. Good to have you on the phone. Wanted to give an update here. Happy to answer any questions, and if I don't know the answer, I'll fake it and or bring you back information. Both Tammy and Brett and Gordon, but Tammy and Brett in particular spent a lot of time at the Capitol this session. Appreciate their help and. We talked a number of times on different bills and issues that were coming up. A couple things I want to make you aware of. Going into this legislative session, I know cities felt like and that there was a target on their back, and there were some areas of real concern, specifically around zoning and the state's nexus to zoning and transportation, some of these issues. The other issue that was of utmost concern was around the 50-50 sales tax split. And potential changes that would be coming there, and then issues as it relates to referendum. I would say, and I think, if Cam Deal was here, he's the one that, you know, has to wear that target day in and day out, the director of the Utah League of Cities and Towns. I think he would agree that the session ended up in a reasonably good spot, but with a lot of unknowns and to-dos coming up. Let me talk specifically on the sales tax issue. I think this is something that's important for cities. They came to kind of a place that they were going to hold cities harmless, but now as we move into this next steps, I think it's something to be very mindful of. There were a number of legislators, including the governor himself, who feel like there is a structural imbalance in the way that our state revenues operate, and that the majority of general government is being funded by sales tax, whereas income is obviously going towards education. And because of that, and the way, you know, our economy is changing and evolving, there is not going to be enough sales tax to fund general government. And so they are looking at expanding that base. The area that they focused on was expanding to services. The example that gets used, this is probably not the best example, you know, but the example that gets used is, you know, 30 years ago, everyone bought a lawnmower that paid sales tax on it. Well, now a lot of people pay for their lawn to be mowed. You don't pay sales tax on that. Whether it's, you know, Uber, Lyft, or your haircuts, you know, that's kind of the area that got talked about from a public perspective. The reality is there are a number of services as our economy continues to change that are not taxed, but they're not particularly easy to tax. I mean, the significant ones are medical services, legal services, accounting, and some of these areas, real estate being the other one, that's what I was trying to think of, that as you think about taxing those, that becomes much more difficult. I mean, think about, you know, you go to the hospital, you already leave the hospital, you know, for significant procedures or, you know, insignificant procedures, and you walk away going, holy mackerel, my insurance didn't cover anything, now I gotta pay X, Y, and Z. Well, now think about adding a 6.75% sales tax on top of that, including, you know, some other things. So this is gonna be a really difficult issue for them to resolve. As of right now, no bill passed. They have put a task force together of 10 members from the House and Senate to start working on this issue. There are some of the more ambitious members that are thinking that they want to get something passed by June or July. I think that's going to be, I think the chances of that are remote as they get into this and start talking about it. There are other proposals that are out there, including a statewide property tax, putting sales tax on food back into the base, and some other ideas. But this is going to be a particularly challenging issue. I mentioned the 50-50 split, which particularly impacts cities. I think there is a desire by some to change that allocation or at least continue to look at it. And I think now that there's more time as they consider potential sales tax changes, that could be looked at. It's largely being talked about as changes to help incentivize cities as it relates to their planning and zoning and how they do that because of the strain that it puts on the transportation network. And so that's at least part of the discussion. I think particularly the League of Cities and Towns did a really good job of talking about and showing data how the 50-50 split doesn't create some of the poor incentives that some people believe it does. But I think there's still some work in education to be done on that. And probably the topic issue du jour for at least the next couple of months, if not longer. I mentioned the zoning. I'll get into that a little bit with some change and then referendum. I think the other thing that was important this year, and I just want to point out as kind of a next steps, and this is something that we talked a lot about during the session. There was a bill introduced by Representative Logan Wild dealing with gravel pits. I know that's been an issue for a number of our cities, and specifically Harriman. The bill that passed, House Bill 288, really just puts kind of a status quo in place on both the gravel pit operators as well as the cities with the focus of continued studying. So tax, obviously a big one, but I think this is one that for a number of cities is pretty significant, and specifically for Harriman. So something that we'll need to stay closely involved in. Anything you wanted to add on that point?
No, we're watching. We discussed some updates with our operation as well with Dogman and stuff. So it's still one already. We're still great watching.
Great.
It's going to be critical for us.
A couple of bills that I'm sure John is already looking at and is excited to write all sorts of new changes to, but... House Bill 119, Representative Dawes' bill, this deals with initiatives, referendum, and other political activities. I mentioned that this was a pretty significant issue. It does change some of the provisions regarding citizens' initiatives. Once again, another issue that we've dealt with here in Harriman. Changes the time frames, changes where signatures need to be collected from, and some other issues along those lines. And so this is something that will have quite a bit of change. Some of the changes are out to 2020, and I'm sure that's to give all the cities times in terms of making these changes. And I think I understand, and John, maybe you can opine if you want to here. As I understand, they've changed where you're going to need to essentially collect or coordinate, I can't remember the exact term they use, but zone population zones, and then you'll need to get, there need to be a certain number of signatures from each zone. And so this does change it, I think. Ultimately, there was support from both the League and UAC, and so I think they came to a pretty good a point on that, to something that we'll need to watch, but an issue that I think will continue to be out there. Anything you want to add on that? No, great.
The cities are able now to, they can increase our words.
Thank you. That is the other big change is, you know, the concern going in was around the issue of and this particularly came out in a couple of cities, including in Provo and Orem, as it related to their BRT. What can cities do in response to a referendum? And so there were some discussion there, and there's some additional language in terms of what cities can do, how that can be. And so hopefully creates a more level playing field. I mean, these are always thorny issues because There's a lot of passion involved when somebody's decided to go through a referendum process, but it does change some of the way that cities can respond on that. Another bill, and I kind of mentioned the planning and zoning issue. One that we spent a lot of time on was Senate Bill 34 dealing with affordable housing. This is a bill that Senator Andrade ran. It changes the way, or well, it creates a menu of options for housing and affordable housing projects that cities must choose from to act on and report on. So there's some reporting requirements. There's a huge long list. I actually brought it with me if I can pull it up. You know, I think it's like 23 items. Where did I put that? Oh, I know where I put it. That are different items that that you can pull from. And it's things like these are, so you need to include a recommendation to implement three or more of the following strategies from this menu. And allow for higher density or moderate income residential development in commercial and mixed-use zones. Apply for or partner with an entity that applies for affordable housing programs administered by the Department of Workforce Services. Participate in a community land trust program. Implement a mortgage assistance program. So there's a huge menu. I think the feeling was is that most cities already do a couple of these, and I don't know if you know the number of how many we do right off the top, but something that we'll need to pay attention to.
It was changed to three, but the problem is it's kicked the door open, and the question is, where does it go from here? Was there another meeting on that today, right?
I didn't know it today.
I don't know if it was today, but I know that it's...
Between legislators or between...
I think, remember they formed the team? That Housing Coalition?
The Housing Coalition.
Oh, the you mean from the chamber and the Housing Gap Coalition, whatever that group is. Okay.
Yeah, that one just has me greatly concerned. I think Senator Andre, you know, I think that the initial one was, you know, palatable, but it just concerns me greatly as we move forward, the changes that are continuing to happen to it.
No, and we were concerned, we talked a lot, we're just monitoring specifically as it even just went to the House, because that's where some of the folks wanted to make more significant changes to. So I grouped those issues up front that are obviously not done. We have some finality because of the end of the session, but are not done, and I agree with you. This sort of nexus between state and cities and zoning and the transportation, I think is very much alive and well. And that's why I mentioned as part of the tax reform as well. I don't think it's going away. So you're absolutely right that, you know, there's going to need to be some education on it and some discussion. And I think that it's an opportunity to talk about what your city is doing specifically and generally. I will say, and I do want to give credit to Harriman, there has been a recognition, and you know, your staff has spent a great deal of time on this, of educating people about what Harriman actually has done and is currently doing on this issue. And it has started to resonate and percolate. There was a feeling, you know, early on, when I say early on, going back even a year plus, you know, Harriman was mentioned in kind of the sentence of, oh, you know, Harriman has, you know, acre lots and they don't do anything else, right? And a lot of work has been spent to educate on that and make people more aware using some of the data that's been pulled. And I think there's starting to be a recognition of that what Harriman actually has done. And so I think that needs to continue.
Tell with that, Chris. Me and Tammy have actually been teaming up making appointments, but I've been meeting with our elected officials, county and state, inviting them to come out and take it on tours of our city to show them actual.
Yeah.
And they're actually very shocked and surprised.
We've also shown them the video of driving through and seeing what the housing situation is.
And then you bring them out and drive it, and we get back by RCL and look back up this way, and we really show them it's good education for them. Mm-hmm. And then we get this opportunity to talk about the future and how we may build a house. So.
Well, I think then at the end of the day, they're the funding out of it too for the Lane Walker funding. It's like, all right, my goodness.
I was with Senator Andrade briefly at lunch today. He's pretty upset that all the funding got removed, and there was an issue that came up in the paper here recently that he was even more upset, you know, that got money and he wasn't able to get any money. So he is a little bit upset about that, and I think an issue. I guess I'll mention.
I would say Senator Henry. I've been very impressed with him.
Yeah.
He's been up front fighting for Herman's needs, even though he only represents a small piece of us. Mm-hmm. you've been very, very good about listening to us and making time for us and defending some of our positions. So yeah. I wanted to get that on the public record because he really deserves some credit there.
Yeah,
yeah.
Agreed. The other issue that he had was around secondary water. And this was ultimately going to have a much larger fiscal note in order to help cities in some way or another get to secondary watering requirements. That money got stripped out. It was going to be a grant program, then it was a loan program, and now there's nothing. But it also changes what they ultimately wanted there. They were pushing to have secondary water meters in cities basically everywhere by a certain date. It's now just new construction and only after April 1, 2020. I'm guessing that's...
Right. This one isn't... We thought we don't care much because we started day one, second water, we started metering. So we just watched the bill, said they threw any curves into that, especially if they throw some funding into it to have, and
help accelerate that.
Identifies people to get it done. Because that would help us in our secondary system. So...
Couple of others that wanted to touch base on, then see if there's any that you want me to address. Some changes were made last year. We had a big work on transportation governance and funding, specifically as it related to UTA. There was some cleanup there, making some things consistent, changing the way that some of the governance is done at UTA, and kind of continuing forward some things there. Generally pretty good. I actually have a bill summary on that to share with you, but it ended up being generally positive. I guess the big public outcry was around changing the name of UTA. That's gone away and had anyway, but officially now has gone away there. Let me touch on, I'm sure some of our folks in the room will want to talk on the public safety firefighter Tier 2 retirement program issue. The state did provide a state reimbursement to the Tier 2 retirement program and phase it out over 4 years, but only funded the first year of that that phase out. And so that does potentially put an impact back to the cities in terms of increasing that cost. Statewide, it's about $2.3 million each year. I don't know if we have a cost estimate on what it would be just for Harriman. But certainly something that I don't think... couldn't be relooked at as we move forward, but an issue that it was pretty significant and spent a lot of time. I don't know if anyone wanted to touch on that or.
Yeah, sure.
This issue.
This bill evolved significantly from its original form. We were in the end able to come up with a pretty good coalition group between us and UAC and the league to identify really what the long term funding issues were going to be associated with. The increase, it's still a defined contribution, but the idea was to bring that retirement benefit up to match the Tier 1 benefit with the exemption that Tier 2 still required at 25 years. So at the end of the day, I think we got a good compromise bill. One piece that was important for us to note is through some foresight and wisdom on behalf of the council administration in Harriman, this is actually a net neutral bill for us. We already take that gap between Tier 1 and Tier 2, and for our Tier 2 employees, we put that into a 401k. So at the end of the day, whatever the state decides is URS's portion of what we have to pay for us is going to be a net neutral change. So it's an ongoing discussion. In fact, there's an interim study group that's being put together between UAC, the league, and the Law Enforcement Legislative Committee. I've been invited to participate on that interim study committee to look at public safety compensation as a whole, not just the retirement piece, but what's the bigger picture and what are we really trying to drive at. So we expect some good productive conversation out of that.
A couple of other issues that might be interested in just high level. Senator Bramble passed a bill, Senate Bill 77, dealing with tax increment, clarifies the county's auditing of CRAs that you might set up, make sure you're receiving the right amount of growth there. Senator McKay passed a bill that deals with public infrastructure. This is an interesting bill, allows cities and developers to create a special service district that will help pay for improvements in infrastructure by adding a potentially a mill levy onto the property tax bill. This is a tool that's used in a number of other states. It has, but it gives the bill vests complete control in the city. Obviously, a developer can propose and work with the city, but the city maintains control over how much can be assessed and how that process would work. But there's the potential for some flexibility and interest both from the city and the developer perspective. And so,
does it require the city to enter into these agreements, or is it?
So it requires the city and the developer to agree or be in unanimous agreement in order to move forward.
So if the city chooses not to participate,
correct,
the city is not mandated.
Correct, correct. And that, but I think that's something that you'll start to see some people looking at and could be potentially beneficial, not only for new development, but for your infrastructure, in and around. So something to be aware of.
Can I make a quick comment on that?
Please, Joe.
It's a double-edged sword because the county can do the same for developments in the county, some of which we know of.
Yeah.
Specifically, Levy Hills.
Yeah.
Okay. Just call it out.
Yep. Let's see. I guess I'll mention the one real good news. Senate Bill 268, Senator Collamore's Transportation Infrastructure Bond Amendments passed. I will say, we were hopeful and working towards a much larger bond, transportation bond this year, for a couple of reasons, but largely around the issues on tax reform. The legislature decided not to do the larger bond. I think that is likely for next year, and there are some projects that we have slated in that. We'll need to continue to position, but we were able to secure $1 million for Boulevard, from 6800 West to 7300 West. That comes through quarter of the quarter funds, which are technically Salt Lake County funds, but distributed by the legislature, and there was a long history to that. But so there was some good news there. That bill has now been signed, and that money is available for Harriman City on that project there. So happy to touch base on any other bills. I think those are the main issues that kind of highlights. And
I have a question.
Please.
I was in a meeting last night, and Michael, you can help me with this. One of the ladies stated something about that CDAs no longer have to have the 10% residential requirement. Do you remember what she was talking about?
No, I don't.
Do you know anything about any legislation that
I know we've
changed
been
that?
Just dealing with this issue on another project in the city.
We do contribute 10% of all of our CDAs to affordable housing component. We're required to. I don't know if there's any change.
Yeah, I think that when you say it out loud, I'm going to have to double check. I think this was in Andrig's bill, but I will have to get the answer to you. I know that there was some discussion about removing that 10%, but I don't know if it officially happened.
Okay.
And so let me double check on that, and I'll send it back through.
It
was in Andrig's bill, correct?
Okay. Because I was in Andrig's. She mentioned that one.
But did it end up coming out? That's what I can't remember.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to verify or clarify that.
So we don't need to. Let's.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd rather not.
Yeah, yeah. But it's good to know. And it's good for us to know going forward. We don't have to.
I'll get back to you.
Clay, did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Chris, as you talk about the potential sales tax distribution, where it's at the 50-50, and as they potentially look at that to moving forward, and as well as the housing, focus that we've had there. I've actually heard some make comments, some elected officials from around the county, that have made comments such as, if they're going to change that tax distribution model that's more heavily weighted to population, why would we then try and go and, incentivize for commercial development and retail development and those types of things that we've been working on very, very hard in Harriman City, obviously, over the last couple of years. But have you heard any talk like that? And I think it's a valid point. Why would we want to, potentially mess with that distribution model? How do we prevent messing with that distribution model that may begin to kind of disincentivize people from the economic development side of things more to the housing side of things if population is going to win out on that tax distribution model?
Yeah, Clint, you raise a really good point. So I think where the discussions started or has been traditionally has been around that issue of tax incentives and who is incentivized and or how are people incentivized. So the state and the local governments are not do not necessarily have the same tax incentive structure, right? The state is incentivized to create jobs and get their money through income tax. And the cities have largely been incentivized through sales tax. Now, it doesn't make it right, wrong, or indifferent. It just they are different incentive structures. And so there has been a desire to try to align those incentive structures above and beyond just the issues as it relates to housing and the transportation network. That's the issue that has sort of come up more and more. But the issue around having similar incentive structures has been one that has played out over the years and was part of it. There was at some point the discussion about even if they introduced new money into the 50-50 split, that there be some sort of jobs component to that. Obviously, the problem is, you know, for us, particularly for a city like Harriman, who is playing by the rules that have been created since the 50-50 split came into effect, which I think was 84.
Which was before we existed.
Yeah. You know, is play by these rules, and now it's trying to change that. You know, I get why there's a desire to change that. It's not even necessarily a bad thing, but it's not. How do you go about doing that? Is there some type of hold harmless, which was what was created in 1984 when they made the sales tax split? So yes, there has been a desire to look at the tax incentive structure as it relates to what is the state incentivized for and how are cities incentivized, and trying to align those in some way that makes sense and gives cities either credit or a bonus for creating jobs. But what does that mean, creating jobs? You know, I think in the state's mind, it's, you know, they want to, you know, land Amazon, you know, HQ2 and put that in the state and then make sure that, you know, the city does that and all of everyone is sort of incentivized in the same way. Well, the reality is, you know, that's not where most of our jobs are coming from. Right now, if homeowner X decides, you know, I'm going to create my own home business, well, is that the same thing? And so there's probably more unanswered questions about that, but absolutely that has been a topic of discussion, and it was going into the session. It became less of a discussion topic during the session this year, but I think that it's absolutely one that will continue in this tax reform conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I think we need to keep, you know, obviously continue to be part of that conversation, both on, as we talk about sales tax distribution and on, you know, the housing component of things, because these two things, obviously, though we're talking about two different bills and two different legislations that was passed and how now as a city we deal with both, they do have effects on each other, and we need to be able to make sure that we're really watching those closely as those discussions continue to move forward and make sure that we have the right balance, or at least advocate for the right balance, but not only for our city, but for all of the other cities in the county.
Yeah, and clearly this issue is so different. I mean, this is the real challenge when you talk about cities is how do you create a baseline? I mean, Salt Lake City's issues are very different, or, you know, even a city that's sort of built out, let's take a Murray City, for example, very different than where Harriman is, you know, versus, and the argument has been made, I think not unreasonably so. One of the challenges we face in Harriman is the transportation infrastructure. You know, I live in Lehigh, but it's a lot easier for Lehigh to attract jobs when I-15 rolls right through the middle of Lehigh City. And so there's already transportation infrastructure, a lot easier for people to locate there than saying, yeah, I'm going to go locate in Harriman when, you know, we've got the transportation challenges that we're facing, you know, that we're all very aware of. And so, you know, some of the inherent advantages that some cities have over others, it's not that, you know, one city is doing something to attract jobs and one city is not. It's just where they're located. And how do you calibrate for something like that, as simple as that?
Yeah, no, good comment. Thank you.
One thing I want to make comment on that, in your opinion, our representation by House Rep. Knopwell and NREG has been very good this year.
Absolutely.
They're listening to us, and I know you've had daily conversation with them, but everything we were involved with, they were very attentive and gave us their time and
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, Representative Notwell, and I want to thank him. You know, he submitted a trail project for us. We ultimately didn't get it funded, but he was he reached out on where he thought there might have been an opportunity that came up, and reached out to us and said, "Hey, I want to get this in and see if we can get something done." He was very, very proactive on that front, and so yeah, I think that's a great comment. And you know, there is there was a lot of discussion this year around the needs of the Southwest communities, and there's been some work done on that front, both from the local government as well as the connection to legislators, and I think that's a positive development to better attune their needs, our needs, and make sure that that's well understood. And so I think that effort started this year and will continue, and that's a positive trend as well.
The other thing I want to cue the council up for is, I think it's going to be a very, very busy, how many berries is that, three berries? Busy off-season, legislative season. There's so many things that are in the works and moving. We thought we'd be done after the 45 days, but it's really going to be, actually, I think everyone took a little break and now they're ready to get back into it. A lot of bills will be worked hard on the off-season, and we'll keep you abreast of how that's moving, but it's probably one of the busiest year off-seasons I've ever seen.
Well, particularly because of the nexus between issues that are so key to how a city grows and develops and finances itself. You know, the sales tax, the zoning, and these issues just interrelate. You know, some years, you know, they're focused on health care. It's like, okay, well, cool, whatever happens, happens. It doesn't necessarily impact us. This year, the issues that are in play this interim session are, you know, squarely in our laps and have an impact on what we do.
I was really repent saying, me, Gordon, Tammy will be watching everything, but really Chris and your team will actually be up there. And
yeah,
well, you know, I had a off season like this year. it's not going to be an off season at all.
No. Plus, I got to pay for my daughter's car insurance.
Yeah, that's right.
So.
Well,
thank you. We appreciate it. And we appreciate all the work that was done by our staff as well.
We have additional updates on the police side of things. From Cody. Cody attended a lot of the meetings and covered a lot of the issues that could impact our public safety, and so he's just going to touch on that.
Yeah, just real quick, I don't want to steal any of Chris's thunder, because he certainly does a lot more work up there than I do, but we sit on the Law Enforcement Legislative Committee as a member of the Utah Chiefs Police Association, and I drag Chief Carr up there with me when I need him to flex his stars occasionally, but of the 574 bills that passed this year, 116 of them, or about 20%, actually touched the criminal justice system in some way. So we do stay pretty busy. We talked about the Tier 2 retirement bill. There were a couple others that I just wanted to highlight real quick to make sure that you have all the information that you need to be on the same page. There are a lot of bills that came out relative to domestic violence and victim protection. Those are all a product of the Coalition on Trauma-Informed Justice Solutions that was put forth last session by Senator Escamilla and Representative Ken Ivory. And a lot of these bills are very minimal in how they change the way that we do things, but there are also great benefits, we think, to a lot of our victims, and so we're very supportive in trying to push some of those bills through. A couple of bills relative to Fourth Amendment, one that I wanted to highlight real quick was Representative Hall's bill, HB 57, that requires search warrant, granting of a search warrant for access to electronic location and electronic data information. And obviously this one has been in the media, I'm sure you're well aware of it. I wanted to let you know why we oppose this bill and so that you understand from our perspective that while we represent you and the city, we also have to make sure that we can do our job in an appropriate way. The original language of that bill, we had some issues with how we were able to access things such as IP addresses on child sex offenses through the AG's office and the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, and essentially would have provided some investigative hurdles. We were able to work some language into that bill to alleviate a lot of those issues. There are always unintended consequences to all these bills, so we do spend a lot of time up there trying to make sure that those get through in a way that's not only beneficial to the citizens that we serve, but also allows us to do our job.
Can I add something to
that? Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that I think is interesting, and I'm sure these guys have their own opinion, I don't mean to put them on the spot on it, but there is, I think I mentioned this last year when we talked, just some of the libertarian influence on the Republican side that's started to, we've got more people elected on that front. It's changed the way law enforcement, some of the things that they've had to deal with, and I think it's going to be an ongoing challenge, because there are clearly legitimate public interest issues and law enforcement issues and how those collide, and so this is going to be an issue that your police and law enforcement are going to have to spend a lot of time on thinking about and being very thoughtful about, because they are becoming more challenging, and our legislature is shifting a little bit in terms of how they view these issues relative to law enforcement. So it is going to be an issue that is going to be challenging for them, that they're going to have to be very thoughtful on as they deal with some of these things. So
I promise Chris and I didn't orchestrate this ahead of time, but that was a perfect segue into my next 2 points, which were bills that we actually opposed and spent a significant amount of time and effort opposing that on face value seem to be very good for the public. One is SB 109, which was Senator Wyler's bill on asset forfeiture. Again, we are very supportive of transparency and being open and honest with the public. I can promise you right now, and Chief Carr will back me up, there is no gray area when it comes to asset forfeiture in Harriman, and there's actually no articulable case anywhere in the state of Utah of those types of policies being abused by law enforcement. However, there are one or two cases that pop up across the country every year where case law is generated, and some of the more libertarian groups latch on to some of that in an effort to try and restrict that. We do things the way that is prescribed in statute. We don't operate outside of the statute. Asset forfeiture is always a hot topic on the Hill, and in fact, this is also going to an interim committee to at least look at how we're going to approach it, because it's going to come back next year. The main reason we opposed this bill was that the way that the language was drafted would have provided some significant hindrances to our ability to access federally funded grant programs that are managed by the state of Utah, which Alan can appreciate, especially in our current budget season. If we're not able to access some of those federally funded grant programs, it puts some hindrances back on us as a city as we're trying to maintain our operational status quo and provide good service for our residents. So. The other bill along those lines was SB 160 by Senator McKay, which was the body camera disclosure bill. Again, we are very supportive of transparency, public transparency. In fact, Chief Carr wrote that very intentionally into our core values when we created our department last year. The way this bill was drafted to prevent an officer from turning off their body camera after a use of force incident, the issues that we had with it are specifically along the lines, well, mostly along the lines of officer-involved incidents, where in, for example, an officer-involved shooting, where after that incident, that officer is actually a criminal suspect and can potentially be criminally charged. They have a right against self-incrimination, the same as any other defendant in our criminal justice system, and preventing them from turning that body camera off. Those disclosures then become part of the public record. Post-incident, we require our officers to provide what we call a public safety statement, which is provided to the first arriving supervisor on scene, which covers things like the number of shots that were fired, approximate direction, description of the suspect, all those things that we need in order to adequately provide for the immediate public safety in the aftermath of that type of an incident. We require those officers to provide that to a supervisor. And if they have to have the body camera on while they're providing that statement, then essentially we've now violated their right against self-incrimination, because that body camera video becomes part of the public record. So again, it's not that we oppose transparency. In fact, the very opposite. It's just that sometimes the language in these bills has unintended consequences and provides hindrances to our ability to effectively do our job, which is why we oppose them, that on face value may look very good and very beneficial to our citizens. We're working with those groups to come to resolutions, but there will always be bills that we just can't work out. So wanted to make sure that you understand why your police department is up on the Hill fighting bills that on face value may seem beneficial to the public that we serve. The only other bill I wanted to touch on, since we talked about Tier 2 retirement already, was SB 103, which is Senator Thatcher's bill on victim targeting enhancements. This is the hate crimes bill. And just as we worked with Senator Thatcher through this session on this bill particularly, he just wanted us to reiterate to those that we serve that this applies only to the sentencing phase of the criminal justice system. It doesn't change in any way, shape, or form anything that we do on the investigative side. It doesn't change our procedures. It doesn't change when we decide to charge a crime, which crime we decide to charge. All that stuff is still done in coordination with the DA, with established protocols and case law. These types of enhancements will only come into effect on the sentencing phase. So he wanted, that information was a little bit fuzzy as media attention was latched onto this bill, and wanted to make sure that that was very clear. I think it's a good bill. We advocated for it. And in the end, I think it will provide some necessary changes to the way some of our cases are prosecuted. So that's all I had. Any other questions on criminal justice, law enforcement issues?
No, I appreciate you.
I only do about 20% of the work that Chris does, so well, I get off easy.
You have a lot of people getting more involved. I think it speaks well of Harriman City and making sure that these issues are well understood. It's good for you. It's good for your citizens. I should have just said, Utah League of Cities and Towns does a great job. Cam and his team, and I think they're to be applauded. I assume some of you will be down at their convention where they'll be talking more about this, but they really do a good job advocating on behalf of cities generally, and so
Cody doesn't good have people. Any kids that are driving yet, so it's
okay. Soon, it will come.
Then the 20% might change.
Yeah.
Anything else on our legislative update? Thank you very much. We appreciate all this. I know I speak on behalf of the council.
Thanks, Chris.
Express our gratitude for all the work that was done this last legislative session. We know that it never really ends. So thank you very much. Item 3.2, 2018-2019 ICE Rider Report. Kevin. All right.
I really wanted to. Yeah.
It's your daughter's
if not for my daughter's birthday, I would be here. Yeah. I'll watch it on the live stream.
Okay. Time. No,
I think
time
I should
time.
Still have that.
All right. Just wanted to give you a little update on the second season that we had. I looked back, and last year we had the difference between the dates that we were open. We were only open 3 days more this year than last year. So in comparison, the attendance is up quite a bit. As you can see, February hit us really hard. The weather was rough. We had to close down the ribbon 10 days out in the month of February. So that, had the weather cooperated, that number would have been quite a bit higher. But we implemented the Learn to Skate program this year, and part of that was to not only teach kids to skate, but also fill up the slower times that the ribbon didn't have participants, and it was a huge success. Part of that program, the kids got some vouchers that encouraged parents to come back, or their siblings to come back and skate. You can see one of the comments here from one of the parents says, "I just wanted to let you know how awesome the Learn to Skate program has been for my kids. I have been so impressed with your staff. They are all so good with the kids. Thank you so much for offering the lessons." And we were really impressed with our staff. They did a great job. I'm really proud of them and the hard work that they did. One of the things that we did notice, we didn't anticipate some of the huge numbers that we were getting, especially on those youth nights. We were processing 150 plus an hour, and that's a lot of people.
You ran out of skates.
Yeah, we were running out of skates. But, constantly taking pictures, and there's like five pairs of skates on the shelf. So because of that, we did have to up our staffing so that we could make the process go as quick as possible. And they did it. They did a great job. They came up with some really great ideas on how to do the process faster. We added another window, thanks to the facilities department, and that helped us to be able to get a better flow. So we're learning and growing. Any questions on the ice river?
Yeah, I do. I see the revenue figure. I just would like to understand the cost behind the revenue.
So staffing was $25,740, and then other expenditures is $14,000. That's the part for programming the space. I can't speak to the utility costs per se, but between those two, it's about $40,000.
We have Zamboni in addition to that, right? Or Pavilionia, right?
Can we get those? Can we get a
I just would like to understand. I mean, I think it's a group.
Right.
We'll
have
take
it,
this
so we
down
need to
and
use
pull it.
It
up right now.
Okay.
I just
yeah,
to understand.
These are the parts that I know.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, if you can give us some.
And just so you know, I got a lot of feedback about this landscape program as well. It was all very
The only thing I got was my granddaughter. She was so sad because she was the February lesson schedule. And she got one too.
February lessons were rough. We had to reschedule over and over again.
That was
ouch.
Tough.
That
not
was
none,
really
none
tough.
Of your doing for sure.
Yeah, we kept going. We're running out of days. What are we going to do?
Okay.
And poor Jeff, when he had to make the call that we had to really close down, he was just sad. He loves that ice and does a really good job.
Yeah, that warm air just melted it.
Yeah, and the wind. It's amazing what wind will do to the ice.
Yeah, and the dust.
We don't get wind.
There's no wind. Awesome. Yep, that was my only question. Good job.
So
it's good to see the difference in how much it's going
to
use.
Yeah, it's been interesting to look at that.
So this is our next item then?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll wait for you to...
No, you're fine. I just wanted to make sure I was clear what we were talking about.
So, we've got a season packed full of events. We've already had some. The next big event is this Saturday. It's the Basket Bash, our Easter egg hunt. So, hopefully, the weather will decide to get warm for Saturday. And we won't have snow. The forecast currently says it is, so knock on wood, it will. But we've got the next couple of slides are just a sampling of what we're going to be offering. Community fishing started this last Monday. It goes for 6 weeks. Our Hungry Herman will start. It's our food truck event that will happen every Monday. That starts on the 22nd. Petapalooza with Healthy Harriman will be on the 11th of May, and then of course we have our Memorial Day breakfast and ceremony, and excited to work with the Veterans and Military Committee on that. And then our rodeo. This year, before the rodeo, we've got the Knights of Mayhem coming, which is a jousting group. So we're excited to try something a little bit different to bring some people in early to enjoy some pre-entertainment and some food. And then around that time is when we'll have our National Trails Day with the Trails Committee. They always do a great project. We've been working to expand our Sounds Like Summer in an effort to listen to what the feedback has come during the Parks and Rec Master Plan and the surveys that have been coming back. So we've got Jackie Foster. She was on The Voice last year, and she'll be coming to perform the Friday before Town Days. And then Town Days is packed full. Monday is Harriman Live. Tuesday we've got a dog show, Dazzle Dogs, and Hypno-Hick, Wednesday, a home run derby, and during our winter Yeti hunt, we had a request to do something during town day, so we're going to do a one-day Yeti hunt on Wednesday. Thursday is going to be our family night. We've got a circus theme that night with acrobats and fire dancers and stilt walkers and all kinds of fun for families to come and enjoy. And then we're going to have a movie that night that's Madagascar 3, circus-themed movie. And then, let's see, Friday, we're calling it Local Heroes Night. Our touch a truck will be with the police and fire and Camp Williams, and we're excited to highlight, especially now that we've almost had HPD for a full year, and let them interact with the public. And kids love to get in their vehicles and whatnot. And canine shows that night. We'll also have a bird show, and the fire department's going to help us again with the foam party, which has been really popular. Let's see. The children's market, which was a huge hit last year, will happen that night as well. And we've got some training courses. Camp Williams is bringing a training course that they're going to do. So should be a lot of fun featured around local heroes. And then Saturday, we've got a new Yeti hunt, or Yeti run. And if you haven't seen the socks, they're pretty awesome. So the Yeti run will happen that day.
Socks.
You get socks if you sign up in time. And then the normal vendors and parade will be that day. We'll start it at 10 o'clock this year, a little bit earlier. Hopefully we won't die of heat. And car show, and of course the carnival is happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, all those days. And then the concert that night is the Party Crashers. We've brought them back this year because we got such great feedback from the public, and then our fireworks show. So that's town days. And then the summer show is Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat in July. The Enduro Challenge will be in August. We'll also have the Harriman Hula happening. That's not on that list. And then we're bringing Peter Breinhold back, but this time in warmer weather, so it should be
not the first snowy night of the
year.
September.
Freezing temperatures in December. And then the Children's Theater, they're doing Schoolhouse Rock, I believe. And then our Community Partners Luncheon, the Harriman Howl, which continues to grow each year. Miss Harriman Pageant, our senior social, and then our December is the Night of Lights, which has been a great collaboration with the Arts Council, and then the very popular Yeti Hunt and Pancakes at PJ's, which is a Santa breakfast event. So one of the things that I've been mulling over is, as we add events and, you know, town days gets longer, there's more expenses, and the rodeo is expensive, and some of these really large events, there's some serious expenses to them. It's trying to figure out ways that we can adjust and cut costs where we don't need to be doing it. And one of those things is concessions for the rodeo and enduro. We're looking at eliminating the costs that we incur and focusing on food vendors taking on that responsibility. We're not in the food business, so we're not good at knowing how much food we need to buy for one event. Where a food truck, they go from one event to the other, and they can use that food from one event to the other.
So what we found in the past, though, we're taking a loss on concessions?
Oh, big time. Okay. Yeah, big time loss, and we're... One of the other things is we're paying staff to operate the concession stand. So our desire is to still utilize the staff, but most of those staff are also working the ICE ribbon. So they're familiar with our systems, our point of sale systems. Have them work the ticket booths, which will help eliminate some of our overtime expenses, which are also pretty big. And then they, so they'll still be happy and stay with us because they're still getting hours. But we don't lose as much money in the food costs. We can utilize that space, the concession building, to have maybe a nonprofit or, you know, like a 4-H or a high school group or something like that. They could go in, they could sell prepackaged foods, so we don't have to deal with the health department issues. And that way the space is still being used, but they're operating with volunteers, and so they're not going to have the loss that we have been having. And the same thing with Black Ridge. We have concessions up there, but it's, you know, people bring their own picnic, they bring their own food. And we've been paying someone to basically sit and hope that someone's going to come buy a candy bar. And it just doesn't make sense to have a whole day's worth of $7 in the till when we're paying this person to just sit. So,
I love that idea. Anytime government can step back and let the private sector come in, and makes way more sense, especially for losing money.
Yeah. At Black Ridge, we can utilize the staff to focus on keeping the park clean, keeping the pavilions clean. People are renting those spaces, making sure those pavilions are clean, the garbages are taken out, the beach is maintained well, and helping to inform people of the rules that are up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that will happen better because they don't feel like they have to stay there. And we can use a vending machine company can come, put a vending machine, there's still food being offered. We don't have to maintain it. We don't have to do any of it. They'll take care of it.
Yeah.
So just so you know, those are a couple of things that we're looking to do to try to think out of the box of how can we think smarter. So are there any questions with what we've got coming up? Or
looks busy.
Yeah, come support. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have you come and be there. So, okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And we'll move on to stormwater utility fee presentation.
Okay. Now we're done with all that boring event stuff. We'll talk about stormwater. Okay. So this is just a preview for tonight. So tonight we're at a public hearing. We have our consultant here, Craig, with Bowen Collins. And so if you have any questions, we can hopefully answer them here. But I wanted to give a little preview of what's going to happen or what we're going to present tonight. And then Bowen Collins will give the presentation in the meeting and then have the public hearing. So nothing's changed from the report that was provided to the council the previous meeting. And the recommended fee will be, let me make sure I get this right, it's going to be $7 is the recommended fee per every single family home. So
for a single detached family home.
ERU.
We'll call it one ERU, but we're not going to split and figure out an ERU for every quarter acre and third acre and 1 acre, eighth of an acre lot.
But if it's a detached single family home, it'll be a $7 fee.
Detached single-family home, we're recommending a $7 fee. We're also broke out into four customer classes, so that was one class. Our second customer class is going to be townhomes and duplexes, and the recommended fee for those is going to be $4.90 per month. Comes out to 0.7 ERUs, or 70%. The next customer class is condominiums and stacked housing. They have a little bit lesser impact on the stormwater system because they're stacked living units. And that one recommended is going to be $4.20 per month, about 60% ERU cost. And the last recommendation is for commercial or customer class is commercial, institutional, apartments, and industrial users. And so this will include churches, schools, all of our apartments, us, rec center, we'll all get charged. And that's going to be per ERU. And we currently have our GIS staff going through. And they've already done this before with the water department a few years ago, but calculated the impervious area for every one of these users. They're going back through right now and just verifying that all the customers, the commercial users and stuff, they're just double checking it.
Making sure they haven't added an extra parking lot.
Making it more bulletproof, just more defensible. And so it'll be 4,000 square feet is going to be one ERU. So when we figure out, say, City Hall has 40,000 square feet of asphalt, we'll divide that by 4,000. That's how many ERUs you'll have. And then, so for example, City Hall would be $747 per month for the stormwater fee. The Copperwood apartment complex, we've estimated at $1,041 if the $7 per ERU is adopted. There's some options for these users to get a reduction, and we're working on a stormwater policy manual right now. We'll have that ready by July 1 is what we're shooting for on that. And that policy manual will include a process for getting a fee reduction that'll be offered. We're recommending to offer a fee reduction to commercial users, the customer class 4. And in order to get that reduction, you have to do some type of stormwater quality improvement. So there's certain products on the market like hydrodynamic separators. Schools will be offered an additional reduction if they implement a stormwater program curriculum into their school, and then they just need to supply the city with their who attended the curriculum and what the curriculum is. And then if we get audited again by the state, which is the impetus of all of this happening, then I can show them, here's our program, and we get credit for that too. And so they get credit for it by doing it, we get credit for implementing one of our control measures. So that's just kind of a preview to what we're doing. Were there any questions?
But we decided on the credits, there's a maximum amount of credits, because no matter what you do in containing your own storm water, you still are having to help maintain the whole system. So you always will pay some sort of a fee. You can never get enough credits that you have no fee.
That's correct.
Because you have to help maintain the system,
the
right?
The credit will be capped at 35% maximum, is I think what our recommendation is. And so
that's probably yet to be determined.
35, 40, we're looking to see what impact.
There'll be a max.
The council will be getting a letter. It's a recommendation letter from the Stormwater Steering Committee we set up. We'll have signatures on the back of it, and it spells out what the fee is recommended, what the maximum recommended credit will be, and certain things like that. So there'll be that. There'll be the report. There'll be the policy. Tonight's the public hearing. We're hoping to come back and for adoption in the next city council meeting, depending on if we get comments or not tonight. And we can address them in time. And then our hope is that we could start collecting the fee July 1st. If it gets adopted.
No. July 1st?
But our hope is that people will reach out, that we'll have people ask questions about it or gain understanding about it. The whole idea behind these public open houses and hearings is to try and help people understand so that when they see it on their bill, they're not shocked and they have an understanding of what it is. So just to plug in there to the public, please, I think, yeah, but please know that this is coming and it's important for them to understand why.
A couple thoughts. So if it's imposed starting July 1, it won't hit water bills until August, right?
Correct.
And
no, it would start July 10th.
Oh, 10th?
Oh, the 10th would be the first invoice.
Okay. And it seems to me somewhat difficult to impose a fee and have a credit if we don't have the credit ready to go by July 1.
The credit will be by application, so they have to apply to get a credit. They'll get charged
the credit. I think I got to talk to you guys offline about this. Okay?
We've discussed a lot of this, so I'll get you up to speed.
All right.
Are there any questions I can answer? Or if not, we'll look forward to the
client. Are you good? Take that as a yes. All right.
Did you just ask if I was good?
Okay. Thank you, client. Appreciate it. Discussion to the interlocal cooperative agreement between Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District and Harriman City. Justin.
so the, when it comes up, if it does, this is basically to supply water to the Harriman Industrial Center out off 118th that's getting constructed right now. So before we talked about running this big long line of Main Street all the way across, we modified and changed our thought process there, and we're connecting to existing infrastructure that Jordan Valley just installed within the last year. Minimize cost and then some water quality concerns that we had as well. So basically, Jordan Valley didn't construct all of their infrastructure needed for us to be able to connect it. So for us to be able to serve water, we're going to go in and construct part of Jordan Valley's infrastructure. And then this agreement is basically a cost-sharing agreement that allows them to reimburse us for the upsize. So we're going to pay, essentially think of it as we're the developer this time, they're the city, we're building their infrastructure. They're going to pay for the upsize cost. We'll pay for the size needed to service us. But
everyone's paying their own fair share.
Yes. So at the end of the day, I don't know if Alan can't get it up. Hold up here. So this project actually bid today, just this afternoon. It came in. Our estimate was somewhere around, the engineer's estimate is 1.1. The bids come back at just under 1.2. And so we'll go through the process over the next week to award that project. But
do we have any concern? I know we've had issues with vendors recently.
No, the apparent low bidder at this time is actually the same contractor that did Jordan Valley's waterline for them, which we thought it might be because they're very familiar with the project. So,
how substantial was the savings?
With Jordan, so this is, we were anticipating the original thought process to be about 3.
That's what I thought. This is substantial.
Savings, so.
The bid was, like I said, the bid came in at about 1.2, and our reimbursement was estimated at about 200,000. So overall cost to us would be about 1 million.
Versus 3. Yeah, that's awesome. Good job.
That's it. So. Was that it?
There you go.
Oh, there we go. It's a presentation.
Anyway, so basically this just goes through the estimated cost that we kind of talked about, just a little more detail on how much pipe is being installed that we're installing for Jordan Valley. So I'll just kind of show you, this is kind of a map of that area. So this right here is our existing water tank. Jordan Valley runs some infrastructure up here, so these colored areas are the infrastructure we're installing that will be Jordan Valley's or the district improvements. So the red is a portion that we're going to install that's a 48-inch welded steel line. We need 20 inches of capacity. Therefore, we'll pay 20 inches worth and Jordan Valley will pay the upsize. So that's essentially it. And then the rest of the improvements are basically this black line right here, which brings it. We have existing pipeline from here to here connecting those two. And then we'll install with this project the rest of the black line to get it down to the industrial center.
Awesome.
And again, they were embedded to Jordan.
Yes. And so there's a bill of sale as part of this agreement that once we're constructed and the project is complete, that this will go and be their infrastructure at that time.
Thank you. We appreciate the work. We appreciate the cost savings.
Yep.
All right. Move on to 3.6, discussion and request to rezone 4.29 acres of A1 agriculture to auto mall special district and C2 commercial located at approximately 5010 West, 12560 South.
Okay. This is another part of the development of our auto mall zoning district, special district. And this is a petition that was submitted by a private developer, not the city in this case. This is Horsley who's submitting this. And it has both a C2 component and the AMSD component. The C2 zone, again, is what's going to be up along the Main Street. And then, apologize, we don't have this graphic for you. We'll go through this again in the session, but this is consistent with the other elements of the rezone that you've previously reviewed. And it did receive recommendation from the Planning Commission, again, 4-0.
All right. Any questions on that? Okay. 2019-2020 budget document presentation. Alan.
Okay. This is going to have to be reset because it's all locked up. But we've been working on the budget for several months now. We've come to the council and we've shared the revenue projections just as they're used in the budget. We've put together, we've had a meeting with our budget committee, which is Brett, Gordon, Tammy, and myself. I've met with every department head, gone through their budgets, gone through all the requests, and we've put together a budget for the coming year. I just want to say again, and this will go without saying as soon as you look at it, Tammy and her crew do an amazing job on this stuff. This is, you know, what they've done in a very short time has been pretty amazing. And it was, the final proofread was done at about 4:45 tonight. It's been going, you know, late night. I know they quit emailing me at about 10 o'clock last night, but I see when I got up this morning, I saw some more that came in at about 12:30. They've been working round the clock to get it done, and it's done. It's an upgrade from last year. We're starting on flash drives this year so that you can get started on it. Our thinking is that over the next month, when we get to the public hearing and so forth, and any changes you want to make, that's when we want to give you your final document. So there's a thumb drive for each one of you there.
Thank you.
Before I actually start into this, though, Tammy's on the agenda with me, so do you want to add anything?
Nope, I think that was probably the biggest thing that I wanted to add is just that the best part about providing it to you now on a flash drive is so that if you have changes that need to be made or if it does look like something is not going to go through, that we can then make all of those changes and pull things out so that then the actual document that we give you is a full, accurate budget. We're not having to put little sticky notes in it or add pages or anything. So
the biggest part is, how many pages is it all now?
277.
288.
288.
Okay, so I thought we were going to break 300 this year, but.
Well, it was close
to
that.
But we took out some duplications.
But you think about that, print that off, and then have to make adjustments and then print on your way off. It's not very cost effective.
Yeah, for preliminary, it's way better.
And just getting started, let me make a few comments up front. First of all, the Zamboni costs us $20,313,000. So it's $20,313 a year. Okay? That's a lease that will expire in 2023. So it'll have a lot of life yet left on it once we're done paying for it.
So we're kind of breaking even on the ice from these things.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously, we're not going to be able to break even if we had the cost of paying for the ground, but we're pretty close, and it's a great amenity.
Right.
Okay, cool.
Okay, second, the lobbyist was talking about the Tier 2 costs.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we are paying Tier 2 adjustment for 6 police officers, and the total cost for that is about $20,000 a year total. And just as we were looking at that a couple months back, reviewing that, I looked at all the Tier 2 people in the city, and if we were to bring all of our Tier 2 people up, even with Tier 1, it would cost us about $45,000 a year. So just for something in your head, we have not proposed that. But he mentioned it, so I'll give you the numbers. We'll work over there.
You're saying all employees, you're saying all sworn officers.
All employees.
I want to make that clear as well.
Sworn officers, we're already paying that.
Right.
That's roughly $20,000.
I just want to make clear to the council is this is a concern to come up in Utah leasing towns, because some city manager administrations out there, tier one, tier two has actually been a problem on all job side. But we are more sensitive on the public safety for right now, and we are, that's why Alan made that statement, is because it does tell you at some point, and we're getting a lot of competition for other employees, for other people. We have a very low employment rate in the state of Utah. There's a lot of work out there. And so we need to try to stay competitive so we can attract and retain good employees.
Does that 45,000 include the 20,000 for our police officers?
No.
It would be so additional.
65.
So 65 total per year.
Yeah. Okay. One other comment on the budget is that as we were going through the process this year, one of the things that we have decided as a committee we should do is include our master fee schedule with the budget, so it's reapproved every year with the review as part of the budget. So the entire master fee schedule is adjusted for some of the needs that we've talked about over the last few months are in there. Now, I know we're looking at a water price or rate increase coming up, so we're going to have to do some periodic maintenance to that. But one of the things we'd like to do is just make it part of our routine budget schedule, that we look at our fee schedule. Mm-hmm. So it will be in there to be approved as part of our budget. Okay. Just want to give you a high overlook of the budget, because it is so detailed that I can't give you the whole thing. But I would just tell you that the work that has been done to call out changes in this budget exceeds what you saw last year. So it's just a phenomenal job. And I'm already hearing how it's going to be improved next year. So, but it's really, really good. Just want to review the budget calendar. We had on the calendar to present the budget tonight. April 24th was supposed to be a discussion of the budget. That meeting's not happening. We are on schedule to approve the budget on May 8th, which is the date that we make it public. So we can make changes that night, the night that you make it. But if you want something in between now, if you communicate that with me and with the other council, we can look at all any questions or things that you have between now and then.
That's just the tentative budget.
That's the tentative. You approve the tentative budget. May 22nd would be our public hearing. And our last meeting that we can adopt, our last regular meeting that we can adopt it on, is June 12th. Okay, so that's
one point. The statute says you tentatively adopt the tentative budget. Right. So it's like,
yeah,
that's just to start the process.
Well, to me, that's when I read it, that says, up until you approve it, I'm just giving you the data. Once you've approved it,
and
then it's
a public consumption,
public document that we get out to the public and let them see. Because if you start giving it to them before you've approved it, and you don't agree with what all of us have done, then you might be fighting a fight for something that you don't need to, because you don't agree with it in the first place. So that's the way I see it. Okay, our total budget for revenue for this year is $31 million, and this is the general fund, which is our operating fund, is $31,262,829. That is an increase of 16.75% from last year. There's two major things that make up the difference. First of all, is sales tax. We're projecting sales tax to be up 16% this year. That's normal growth plus the 0.25% that's been approved. So we're expecting a large group. The other is the money that we will receive from the Harriman City Safety Enforcement Area. Last year, we had to pay over $1 million of that dollars to UPD. This year, we'll get all of that. So the revenue coming from HCC this year will be $1,700,000 more than we received last year. So that's the main things that make up our difference in our growth in revenue. there's a lot of growth. Of course, our building permits are going up. We budgeted the building permits to grow at 6%. They've been growing at a rate higher than that. But we're looking at what we think the growth can handle this year. Maybe we've underdone it, but we're very conservative on our revenue projections. But you also see, when you look at our expenses, our total projected expenses are $25,678,000. That's an 11% increase over last year.
Which is what we like, those two different.
Yeah, they need to be different. And in fact, that number of the expenses would actually be wider, but we are replacing 14 trucks, I think, this year that are old. And, one of them in particular in Parks is a hook truck that's
Parks and Street.
It's 15 years old. It's a 15-year-old truck. It's the first one we had.
Big trucks used.
And it's $288,000 just for that one. But we've got some normal replacements coming up this year, or else that change in expenses would be even a greater number. Just looking at revenue, one of the things that adding the police department to us and we get their piece of revenue is that our licenses and permits dropped from 40% to 29% because of the additional revenue coming through our HCC at this time.
I have a question for you. Sorry, to interject here. How are we doing as far as lessening the gap between one-time money and ongoing money? Is that better?
Well, just in round numbers off of this budget, okay, let me go back one slide.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. No problem. When you look here and you see $31 million worth of revenue and $25 million worth of expenditures, we're about $7 million there. That is that difference. We've got to have a balanced budget, so when all's said and done, the expenses in our general fund have to match our revenue, okay? The balance of that is moved to where we use it for capital projects, okay? Well, $1 million of it goes towards bond payments, and the balance is capital projects. So right now, our one-time money in the general fund is about $8 million. We're transferring $5 million out of this budget to capital projects. So that's how close we are right now to
getting closer.
So we're getting closer.
Okay.
You know, that's the thing to me is when I get to the bottom of the budget in general fund, I'm looking at, okay, we've done what we need to maintain services. Now this is what we've got left to move into our capital projects and do some of the other things that we want.
Okay.
So right now, I would say that we're roughly $3 million because, you know, I suspect if we had a complete downturn and our building permits went away, one of the things additionally to that is in 2009, things just went to nothing. We still had $1 million of building permits that year. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it doesn't go clear to nothing,
right.
But we're at close to $9 million this year, okay? It's under nine, but it's getting up there. And so you're still gonna have some. We're within three here, so you know, you're looking at maybe having to revamp $2 million in the budget somewhere.
Plus in this budget, we're also putting aside and trying to get close as we can to our 25% that's allowed by the state statute and fund balance.
Yeah. I just like that we're headed in the right direction.
We are. And just one more other thing that I just thought about is that there are $1 million worth of cost of buying new vehicles in this budget.
Right.
You don't buy the new vehicles, you're another $1 million closer.
Yeah.
You know, eventually that'll catch up with you, but, you know,
So we now talk all the time.
No, we talk about that all the time.
09 year, come back to us again.
Yeah.
No. You always got to be planning for that. What do we do?
I'm saying this is what you do if the bottom falls out.
Right.
You cut the capital projects that cut your food cost, you're there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, we are improving that. Like you say, you know, our licenses and permits are still a very big piece of us, but only 30%. Taxes are 30%. You know, they're within half a percent of each other. Sales tax is growing at an extreme rate. Now, the discussion from earlier, where we're at right now, we would benefit greatly from a population-based sales tax. That will change over time, but right now, it would give us a ton more money. Okay, just for what it's worth. Now, as we attract more business, that could change the other way, but 80% of our revenue is property. It's population-based
that's,
now.
That's what the state's been talking about. I mean, we actually knew through legislation that we would benefit. That's the direction to go. But your small city's long life 15, it hurt them a lot.
Yeah, and as like you said, as the shift and change, as more and more commercial comes
it will
in,
change.
It shifts and change
right now. Right today, it would benefit us, but in the long run, I don't think it will.
Right.
Okay, this is our general fund expenditures. And one thing to keep in mind as you look at the change in our expenditures this year, we're comparing, you know, you'll be looking at comparison of the police department between 2019 to 2020 budget. We only had the police department for 9 months in our current year. We're budgeting a whole year in the next one. However, the growth in the police is not as much as you would expect because we had a lot of startup costs last year. So we're only looking at about a 16% overall cost in the police this year. So you see they're a quarter of our percent here, quarter of the total expenses, but they're going up 16% by themselves. When you look at all of the expenses without the police, we're only going up about 8% overall. You know, but keep in mind, when we talk about that increase, it was 9 months last year, and we're talking 12 months this year. So there's a difference. And because of the startup costs, we're not seeing as much difference as you might otherwise see. I did want to bring this to your attention. In the budget, we are for the 2020 budget, we are budgeting the police for expenses of $7,231,000. We are projecting revenue between property taxes and the other revenues they get, such as the reimbursement from the school district for SROs and so forth, $7,322,000. So the revenue we are projecting will exceed the expenditures by $90,500. So,
look at what you have to spend.
Let me just tell you, when the budget came in, this number was the other way by several hundred thousand dollars. And as we sat with Troy, we felt like we needed to make sure it fit within what we had, and he made the adjustments.
And Chief Carr went back down with his team and
hammered out,
questioned them for a few days, and they came back with a better budget.
But as you,
but you're going to have a police department of 37 sworn members. We're going to add, you know, a civilian. I think we staffed it very well. Yeah. And remember, we said it wasn't about saving money; it was getting what we paid for. And we're staffing one heck of a police department.
As you mentioned, this budget includes a new SRO sergeant, a new SRO, and a records clerk. So they're adding people and staying within the parameter that we started with. So I just wanted to make sure that that was on the record, because there was a lot of worry about that the cost would go up beyond what it, but we will have 38 sworn. We're doing it for less money. We're staying under what was projected. So I think this was important.
So what you're saying is we're staying under projected. We're still adding more officers to take care of it.
We are.
And
you know,
if you're out of the gate, you added a school resource officer, right?
Remember, you went from 28 with UPD to 35 right after.
Well, you know, you think about just adding a school to three. We're adding 12 new crossing guards, 3 new full-time people, and we're keeping within what we said we would.
And our crossing guards have gone up
significantly, as they do, and you know, we're going to experience probably a $50,000 or $60,000 increase across yeah. with the schools we put on just
yeah.
That's
you know, that's just added to us with no
room. Jared this time.
But seriously, it actually came out almost $70,000.
It's just like if the state has a surplus because it needs to go to schools, that maybe they should be paying for grass
guys. Yeah, there's a pesky little law in place that the local authority takes care of that. But
well,
we tried.
Given that thought, you know, the crossing guards and the full cost of SROs should be
yeah.
covered in my thinking, but
I
it's
agree.
Not. You know, we get $45,000 for an SRO.
And we have a significant SRO unit. Now, because we have schools.
Which is important.
It is very important.
It is, but
we believe in it.
$45,000 comes nowhere close
yeah,
to covering our costs.
Costs
yeah.
right.
So,
okay.
yeah. Before we go on this, because this is something that I'm concerned about, I am extremely appreciative that we've gotten to a place where we're showing our residents that we can do this with, with the money that we have. What I know that we've talked in the past, Chief, about the need to continue to expand our department to meet our growing population and the fact that we're basically understaffed anyways when we started. We took a huge jump when we started HPD.
Right.
What's the plan moving forward to make sure that we're continuing along that path to address that population growth as well as our city continues to grow and make sure we don't end up in the same situation that we were in with you?
Well, and we look at, and Alan, jump in here with me, we look at the HCC, it grows every year, obviously, as does our population and property taxes that are associated with that. So as we see that growth, we recognize that we need to add officers.
It doesn't necessarily equate per thousand like we've talked about quite a few times. So we look at that and say, what really are we needing, what really are we using, and what areas are we, is it in patrols, is it investigations? We know that our investigations is going to become a problem soon, right? We're largely a property crime city, but that will change. And we, even right now, our detectives are getting swamped. They do a great job, but it'll come to a point where we need to change that. So we really do. We look at the growth, and you've seen my projection charts. Even if we grow at 4 to 5 a year, officers, that is, at build-out, we're substantially understaffed. And that will change with our transportation needs, right? Our traffic units will need to be increased, and so will other units that deal with just the infrastructure of a city. It's completely separate of all the other things a law enforcement entity has to do. Traffic's a huge issue. So as we see that grow, we have to recognize that we're going to have to, from time to time, step it up. Now, all that being said, we visited with other cities that have a high growth rate, like we do. South Jordan specifically, we said, how do you grow a police department as quick as your city grows? And they said, interestingly enough, they've tried to put on 5, 6, 7 officers a year, and they have 80 cops over there. They're a big police department. And they even struggle with the training process that if I take somebody right off the roads a year before they're in a police car, they even struggle at 6 to 7 new hires a year trying to get them trained. It can bring a training unit to its knees. So we're trying to weigh all of that and say, do we start with 3 and 4 as we grow? And we all sit down and say, how much growth we had in HCC, how does that equate to how much more we put on? Does it need to be people or does it need to be things? So those are the things we try to balance
I think
out.
That it comes down to, and Chief and I have talked about this a lot, but it's the same thing we're trying to do with sales tax. You bring a Costco in here, you fund cops better than if you bring a bunch of houses in there.
Absolutely.
You bring an auto mall in, you do the same thing. You bring in Winco, you bring in Bullfrog. The things that we've been working on for economic development are the things that are going to help us grow our police department. Those are the things that are really going to give us the ability to grow at a faster rate than the population, is if we can grow that commercial base. You know, if we get the CDA over in by RSL, you know, that by itself, you know, get a hotel and whatever's going to change the whole picture.
And our services are taken by typically residential areas, but our revenue is created by commercial areas
and
industrial.
It comes back to the same thing we've been working on for sales tax growth and whatever else.
And I think our picture will change, and I'm dedicated to projecting what we really need. Not living high on the hog or struggling. we need to have that close projection, and my team's right on top of that.
So as the chief law enforcement officer in our city, are you comfortable with the number of officers we're putting on this year?
This year. The story will change next.
Sure, and our
right.
And we see our economics outlook change every
right.
year too, so that's good.
Right, and we're in a position where we are changing out some cars from UPD. We got some old cars, and that took up a little bit of our budget this year. And if we don't, especially in law enforcement, those cars are tough. You know, cops are tough on cars. Just the business of policing is tough on cars.
To be clear to the public, is some of the vehicles we came over from UPD, they're aged, they're due to replacement. So we took them, and now we got to cycle them out.
To be kind, you've seen some of the trucks that we got. Yeah, they were old boneyard trucks that were actually on our...
The ones we purchased were all brand new.
So at any rate, we're struggling through that a little bit this year because I'm very sensitive to fleet creep. We don't want that to happen, especially in law enforcement. Mission critical stuff can't be sitting broken.
Broken down.
No, cannot.
So, you know, we have a great program going on with our fleet department and how they evaluate cars for when they need to be redone.
And their point system, just to give you a little idea, some of our management, the trucks are 10 years old. Hook lift. I'm actually doing this kind of response. I'm actually proud that they've managed it so well. When you think of that type of equipment, cities are not hanging on to them 15 years. If they do, they're in really poor shape. Ours are not that bad shape in reality. It's just we're starting to see some other signs, and it's starting to cost us a lot of money to maintain them. Mm-hmm. This time they think they're going to get a resale value on them and replace them. So, a very balanced point. Tom Monty and his team that's managing that because actually you're stretching things Simmons further than I thought we could. That is true. That truck typically go up 10 years, not 15.
So we have our eye on the growth. We'll be back.
Okay, just want to look real quickly at some of our capital projects that are budgeted in this budget. First of all, we did not budget any general fund capital projects this year. We can't put any in there until we get the auto mall property moved. And we are budgeting a negative fund balance in capital projects, but we have covered it from other sources. So, but you know, we can't budget additional costs there. So, we're budgeting $4.2 million to be spent in parking bag fees, $1.6 million in storm drain impact fees, $3.6 million in road impact fees, streetlight fund $770,000, and the streetlight fund $200,000. Then in our enterprise fund, our water fund has budgeted to spend $1.276 million on water projects. These are water projects that don't qualify for impact fees. They're typically upgrades and repair and replacement. Water rights fund is projecting to buy $2.5 million in water rights this year. And then our water impact fund is scheduled to spend $2.2 million on water eligible impact fee funds. That's an overview of the 288 pages. Again, I just tell you, if you have any questions, ask Tammy.
Ask Tammy, okay.
Please feel free to contact us if you have questions. I'll respond any answers to everybody and make sure you have what you need.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Okay. We look.
Hey, can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, you're there.
Go ahead.
So obviously, I'm very, very grateful and proud that we have set up the police department the way we have with the HCC, and we have that funding mechanism in place that's specific for those public safety needs. Public safety should and always should remain, a top priority in any community. My question is in regards to the rest of the city budget. Again, we saw some growth on the HCC side of things, which now is going to allow for a couple of additional allocations in that department. Are we seeing the same type of growth on the other side of the house just for the city funds that will also allow for additional allocations in the other departments of the city where obviously we have additional needs as well?
We do. I can't remember exactly how many new people are in this budget, but we have new people in virtually every department, not all of them, but a good share of them. Just off the top of my head, we'll be adding one person in finance. We're adding half a person in admin. Let's see, we're adding half a person in fleet. Anyhow, it's just we've got several added, but I think streets, for instance, though, instead of adding full-time people, are adding more seasonals. Events added more seasonals. We've got one more new one in water. Parks has two. We're proposing an arborist and someone to work the trails.
Good.
Yeah, we've got a number of new people,
I appreciate that.
I don't know of any requests for people that were not put in this budget.
Okay, that's great. Like I say, obviously I'm very proud of the fact we have the HCC set up the way it does to be able to fund that important need of our police department. But there's always going to be those competing requests in terms of the city as a whole that as a council we need to be able to look at. And again, I want to make sure that we're seeing growth similar on both sides so that we can always try and fund. We're going to have needs in public safety all the time as we continue to grow. But as the services we provide to our community, we're going to have needs everywhere else. And those are important as well to be able to consider. So thanks for that.
Yeah, we tried to make sure that we did not spend any of the normal city funds on the police, that we only used the HCC. So the growth that's happening in the other city funds can be focused on the other departments. The police get what they get from the property.
Did you hear that, Claire? We're making it to where we're not having our public safety compete. Yes, the other fund items.
Nope, and that's what I wanted to clarify is that, again, that the HCC was doing what it was set up and intended to do, and that we can focus on the other side to be able to fulfill those other requests and needs that exist as well. So thank you.
I do have one more comment. Okay. Just it was appropriate, I think, well, interesting that Kevin made those comments tonight about the issue with the food banning and stuff, because you can do a great job on your budget and say, here's where we spent all the money, and it's, yeah, that's right, it looks good. But it's another thing to introspect and do those internal audits that I'd asked Fred about, and just internally audit yourself and say, yeah, we can spend that money, but should we spend that money back? Can we look at it and start cutting that because there's better ways to do it? So I appreciate that people are looking at those better ways to do things to help cut those costs.
I'm actually so impressed when you hear about, just talking about fleet, you heard about Kevin's comments, but those internal audits in the department itself, deploy those efficiencies and we can do things better and cheaper, more efficient. We are doing those things also. I'm not adjusting because he's easier to look at across the table, but very impressed with always when they come to our budget committee meetings, they know that when they come into that force of four, that they better have a good reason why they're adding the FTE on, or they actually, we got a question about they took, cut out a piece of equipment. And they said, we can't justify the need for it. It's a luxury, but we can't justify the need for it. And so they are very, very conscious about what's efficient.
Yeah, well, Justin, he didn't say that we'd already said, okay, to the $3 million. Yeah. And he didn't say, yeah, it's okay, we can spend it. He said, yeah, but can we do it cheaper? That's huge.
Yeah.
That those more are the directors. Right, exactly. And it is. It's not just because we're doing it cheaper, it's because it's more effective.
Yeah, I had a conversation today with New York City today, and I just want to share this with you if I got a moment. And it's back when we used to contract for stone plowing. And after we did analysis, that we decided that it was time over years that we had more roads. We had a justification of buying a 10-wheeler to actually push the heavier snow that we actually cut a cost by buying our own truck, hiring people to drive it. We actually use the truck year-round, not just the season. And guess what? We can't cut out of it, too. We save money, and we're more efficient.
Yeah.
Because that city actually contracting, they're saying, we're not getting the service that we need. And then we know that we need a missed road or two to come snow. But that's just not by design. It's a mistake. We typically pop every single road every cul-de-sac. And that's rare.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome. Good job.
Anyway, thank you for the comment, though. And we will continue to relook ourselves, see how we can be more efficient.
So with that, it's now time for a general meeting. So I will accept a motion to go into to suspend our work meeting.
So we get to come back to work meeting. So.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.